This is part two of the success call with Alexis Bolin. How often are you sending out those recipe cards?
Once a month.
And those are very personal. You're not just buying those out of a catalog. You're sending your recipes, your family's recipes, your friends' recipes, your past clients' recipes. So you're actually having to go out and initiate that and research that.
Dig up recipes.
Digging up recipes.
Yes. It's not hard, though.
It's a very personal touch.
Well, Southern ladies cook, you see. Southern ladies cook. So it's not too hard. And they love to do that. I'll tell you another thing that happened to me, you know, holding open houses. And we don't do that here in our area to sell houses. I know my youngest child works for my dear friend Carol Greco up in the D.C. area, up in Northern Virginia. And the first thing they do when they get a listing is they do an open house that very weekend. They get everything together, the flyers, everything, and then that Saturday or Sunday they have an open house. Well, we don't do that here. But we do have our builders' parade of homes here, where the builders all pick a subdivision and they build homes, and we have a big parade of homes, and here it'll be multiple subdivisions all throughout two counties where different builders are building. So when I hold open house during parade week for the builders, every realtor out there is giving people a business card. And all they do is go to the next house and throw it in the trash can. So I don't do that. I started that many, many, many years ago, too, is I pass out recipes. So my business card's on one side, the recipe's on the other side, and I hand them a recipe. And they don't throw it away. Even the guys don't throw it away. Typically, it's a Sunday. And, you know, the guy doesn't want to be there. He wants to be home watching TV, football, something. And so while the wife is poking through the house, usually the builders have them all set up like a model home, the husband is like slumped at the bar stool or sitting on the chair or something, bored to tears. And I'll go over and hand him a recipe and say, hey, this is really good. Does she cook? If she does, you might get her to cook this for you. And I'll get a giggle out of him. Of course, the wife comes back and wants to know what I'm talking to her husband about. And then that's when I say I just gave him the best chicken casserole recipe or whatever it happens to be, and you might want to try it. So I have a conversation going that I wouldn't ordinarily have had, because 90% of them are not there to buy a house. They're there to look. So I've done a lot of business from that because it's different. So I challenge the people who are going to listen to this to do something different. You can take something old and put a new twist on it. But whatever you do, do something different. Do something that's unique to you that the other agents in town aren't doing. So if you have to go hold an open house, maybe you'll pass out a newsletter or whatever. Maybe you'll make cookies and pass out some samples with your recipe or whatever you're doing. But do something different. And don't just be like everybody else. You've got to be first or unique. So you can take something somebody else has done and make it unique to you.
When you send out the just sold cards, do you send them out to the entire neighborhood or just a certain number of houses around the home you just sold?
No, I send them to the whole neighborhood. It's just so much easier than to have to pick and choose which street numbers I'm going to send it to. So we send it to the whole neighborhood. And the other thing is, I did this years ago. I went through the neighborhoods, we drove neighborhoods, and we wrote down every address in every neighborhood. Well, now you can go online to the property appraiser's office and get this stuff, but years ago you couldn't. And I didn't want to have to keep up the names in those neighborhoods because they change. So I just send my stuff out to the homeowner without somebody's name on it, and it goes to the house. So that way I don't get somebody's name wrong, and they don't seem to care. Now, it's nicer if you go to the tax rolls and print the labels and do that. It's still not necessarily correct because our tax rolls are behind in corrections. So the Smiths may have moved 3 months ago, and the tax rolls are not up to date. And there's no forwarding on it, so it just goes in the trash. So this way it goes to whoever lives in the house, whether it's the tenant or the owner or whoever.
Alexis, did I understand correctly that you have a TV show?
I do. Come on down. I have a live call-in television show. It's called Let's Talk Real Estate with Alexis Bowen. It's on every fourth Tuesday at 8:30 in prime time. It's on a local cable station called Blab TV, B-L-A-B. My husband says they named the station for me. Anyway, I started this in, we can't remember if it was 87 or 88, but that's how long I've been doing this show in the same time slot. As you can see, I'm consistent. So we'll have a guest on, and so it might be one of the property appraisers. It could be a lender. It could be the termite people. It might be one of the county commissioners or the city folks down to talk about what's going on. During my show, I show pictures of some of my listings, and so it's a way to advertise my properties, but it's also a way to get information out to the public. So we might be on there talking, for example, about property taxes and homestead tax exemption for Florida, and people can call in and ask their questions. And so we try to keep it timely to what's going on at the time. And interest rates start popping up a little bit, then I'll get a lender on, and we'll talk about the interest rates and why it's jumping up and where they think it's going to go and the different loan programs that are available out there. And so it's been great. It's been great. I do business from it. It makes me unique again in that I'm the only agent here that does a live television show. So I have something to offer to the seller in the way of marketing that nobody else is doing.
How long is the show itself? Is it a 30-minute, a 1 hour?
It's a 30-minute show. 30-minute show. Now, I have had some of my real estate buddies from all over the nation here to do the show with me, since they just happened to be in town for some other reason and did the television show with me. And we were able to talk about what's going on in their area of the world and how it relates to real estate in general and how similar it is to Pensacola and how different it is from Pensacola and how they do business where they are, just so my viewing audience can get an idea of it's different other places, but yet it's still the same in some things, like price.
By putting on that show, and you've done it for a long time now, that's created a little bit of celebrity status for you as well as expert status. Have you found that to be true?
Yes, I have. As a matter of fact, I have to tell you a story that happened a few years back. With the crazy hours I keep, you know, thank God Walmart's open all night or I wouldn't get a lot of things done. So it's Christmas season and I'm in Walmart and I'm trying to buy a few items that I need and it is literally 11 o'clock at night. So I come down one of the aisles and all of a sudden there is a lady at the other end of the aisle. And she hollers out, "Oh, my God, that's Alexis Bowen." Well, I just kind of froze, and then I wanted to melt like a popsicle. Before I knew it, there she was, standing next to me, threw her arms around me, gave me a great big hug. And now I'm saying to myself, "Holy crow, am I supposed to know this woman? Because she doesn't look familiar to me at all." Now, how many times have we been caught in that? And so I think, okay, I just have to admit I don't know her. And then if I'm wrong, I'll apologize if I'm supposed to know her. So I said to her, "You'll have to forgive me. In my old age, I don't recall having met you." And she said, "Oh, girl, you haven't met me. I watch your show all the time. And I just love it. And I just feel like I've known you forever." I said, "Okay." And so the next thing I know, she hollers at her girlfriend, "Come over here. You have to meet Alexis." Now, at this point, because there's a lot of shoppers in there because it's during Christmas, they're all now staring, like, "What's going on over here?" So here comes the girlfriend. She introduces the girlfriend. I get a hug from the girlfriend. Girlfriend goes, "Oh, man, I watched that show, too. I learned so much." So I'm, like, standing there mortified. You know, I'm shocked. So I finally said to him, "Well, have you guys ever called in with a question?" And they said, "No." I said, "Well, I'm going to expect you to do that next time." They said, "Okay, we'll think of one." I said, "All right, when you do, remind me that I met you in Walmart at midnight." Sure, indeed, the next show she calls. "This is the lady you met in Walmart at midnight." So, yes, it happens. It's crazy, but it does.
Do you get paid to be part of the show, or do you have to pay to be part of the show? Is there any compensation that goes back and forth?
No. Remember me, I don't let anybody give me anything. No, I pay for the show. It's about $650 for the half-hour show. I pay for the show. It's my show. I don't let, like, for example, any of the vendors I do business with would help comp that show, but I don't let them do that because I don't want to be beholden. But I give them an opportunity to come on and get exposure. And then sometimes I give my show to nonprofits that they have an event coming up and they need to advertise it. And then my show goes live on Tuesday nights from 8:30 to 9, and then it's recorded. And then during the month when they have empty slots, they'll play it back 15 times during the month. So the show may play on Sunday morning at 8 o'clock or Sunday night at midnight, but 15 more times it plays during the month.
Wow, that's a big benefit. I didn't realize that.
It is. The other big benefit is this. I find that a lot of the agents locally watch the show. And I'm glad, because when we have experts on, they learn. And when they learn, it's better for all of us. But I can tell, because if I show a house in the next day or two, I'll get a call from somebody that says, oh, you showed a house on TV the other night, and my customer saw it, and they, you know, I need to know what the address is, and you know, we might want to go look at it, and so forth. And I can tell by talking to them, they saw the show because they know a little bit too much about it, and it wasn't their customer at all. But they wanted to know where it was because they thought of somebody they could show it to, which is fun. Because, see, my job is to market the house. And marketing to the other agents markets the house.
Alexis, I've heard you referred to as the queen of objection handling. You seem to have a sixth sense there. And I'd like to talk about that a little bit. Do you have a technique that you use when you receive an objection? How do you deal with the objections?
Well, fortunately for me, Mike, I don't have a technique. I don't have to memorize scripts and dialogues. That's just one of my fortes. There's other things that I have to work a lot harder at, and I recognize that. But scripts and dialogues can be learned, because we learn things. We learn poems, and we learn, you know, if I ask you to cite the beginning of the Gettysburg Address, you could do that. Why? Because we had to learn that in school. So learning what to say in the form of scripts and dialogues is nothing more than like memorizing a poem. And then when you need it, you can pull it out. For me, that hasn't been necessary, because maybe all those years of waiting tables, I'm like Flo in Mills Diner. I just have an answer. And I don't know why I have an answer, but I have an answer. And I've never not had an answer. So I would say to people out there, if you find that difficult for you, you need to write down some dialogue, some scripts. You need to tape yourself saying them. You need to play them back until they're ingrained in your head, so that the next time an objection comes up, then you've got the answer for it. It's going to roll right off your tongue. You don't even have to think about it. But with me, I don't have to think about it. I can just answer.
Is that because you've been doing it so long? Did people stump you in the beginning, or do you just have a wit about you that even back in the beginning you were able to respond right away?
I haven't been stumped ever. That's why my husband said Blab TV was made for me. I guess I process quickly is all I can say, Mike. And my mother said I was like that from the time I was little. So I don't know. I just know that I have an answer and I can process pretty quick. So now, you know, don't ask me about Einstein's theory of relativity. I won't have any answer other than to tell you I'm not as smart as Einstein, so I don't know anything about it. But when it comes to real estate objections and things like that, I have no issues.
I would have to think that part of your skill set in doing that is that you must listen well. You must be getting what they're asking you. In order to respond at all, you have to know what the topic is. Do you use any kind of questioning techniques when you get the objection to try to isolate and identify it? Or is it just that you've listened so well off the bat that you usually get it?
Typically, I get it. what I am able to do is to read between the lines, because when someone throws an objection out there, there's something else going on. And the way to clear that out is usually, I'm confused. Do you mind if I ask a question? So then I want to ask a question to further clarify what it is you said to me, Mike. And I'm going to keep asking questions. My grandmother was Jewish. She never answered a question with a statement. She always answered a question with a question. So maybe I learned from her. I don't know. But I know that you have to dig down deep sometimes to get at the root of what the issue really happens to be. I mean, if you throw something at me, I can show you. I just guess I can't explain it.
Let's try a few. If you don't mind, let's role play a couple of common objections and just have a little fun with it. Let's say a buyer lead calls on a sign and you start to talk to them. You get a dialogue going and you ask if the buyer would like to see some more homes with you or see some homes with you. And the buyer's response is, I only want to work directly with the listing agent.
Really? Why is that, Mike?
I was told I could get a better deal if I go directly to the listing agent.
Really? And what kind of better deal were you thinking?
Well, I'm not sure. My father-in-law told me that that's what I should do, and he's a pretty smart guy.
Okay. So you're thinking the seller will take less money if you're working directly with the listing agent?
Yeah, the way he explained it is then they wouldn't have to pay an agent working with the buyer, and then that way I could get that money.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they could knock that off the price of the home.
Would you be surprised, Mike, if I told you in all my 35 years in real estate, I've not really seen that happen?
I haven't done it myself, so yeah, I'm just kind of following what somebody told me. I believe that that may be true.
All right, do you mind if I ask a question? Because I'm really curious as to how people think like this. There must be a school that teaches this stuff, Mike, because I have not really come across this. If you were the seller, would it make a difference to you if the buyer was working with a different agent who represented them, or if they were working with the agent who had the listing? If you were the seller.
If I was the seller, I'd probably just want an offer on my house.
So it wouldn't matter to you?
It probably wouldn't matter.
Right. Would you as the seller maybe think that your agent is a good agent to deal with and it might be easier to deal with that same agent than it would be with a different agent?
Yeah.
And if you had two offers, would you be inclined to maybe work with the buyer who's working with the same agent as the listing agent because it might be easier for you?
Yeah, I might do that.
Then would you be willing to give up some more money for the buyer because of that?
I don't know if I want to give up the money.
Okay. Then would you as a seller ask me, after I've worked hard to find you a good buyer for the house, to get less money than the strange agent that you don't know who's working with the buyer?
I could see how that'd be a difficult conversation.
So you see where we're going?
Yeah.
Now, at no time did I really answer your question, did I?
No. No, you walked me through some steps, some logical steps.
And you came to the conclusion that the seller's probably not going to do that, right?
Yeah, that it was not a benefit in the end.
That is correct. If I had started an argument with you as a buyer, saying, look, it just doesn't work that way, you know, I have to get paid or whatever people say, then you alienate that buyer.
Right. I noticed you use a technique. My father has a famous saying. He always says, play dumb, ask dumb questions. And it sounded to me like that's what you were doing in the beginning. You said, really? It didn't make any sense. And you're probing.
Yes. I'm blonde. Yes. I'm always confused and I'm always asking questions. In order to help you better, I have to have answers.
You're really digging and you're taking control of the conversation by asking those questions.
Yes, absolutely. And you're causing the people to think. Rather than saying to the buyer who says, I only want to work with the listing agent because I can get a better deal, and you're thinking to yourself, okay, you're a nut. But you don't say that. What you want to do is ask enough questions that leads the buyer back, or the person you're talking with, the seller, whomever, that leads them back to their own conclusion, which is the right conclusion, which is that's a wrong way to think. Years ago, I had a seller who said to me, would you take less for your commission? And I said, that's an interesting concept. And he goes, what do you mean? And I said, well, I haven't really given that a lot of thought because not too many people ask me to do that. But now that you ask, would you do that? And he goes, what are you talking about? And I said, if your boss came to you and wanted you to work for less, but do the same amount of work or more than anybody else in the office, would you be inclined to do that? He thought for a minute and he goes, no. I said, okay. Is there anything else you want to ask me?
So you got him to say no instead of you saying no.
That's correct. Exactly right. Because he wasn't going to do it, so why should I? And that was the end of the conversation. My very first listing appointment, he said, you know, Alexis, we really like you. And we'll probably buy that house that you showed us from you. But now I'm concerned about listing my house. I really, really want a seasoned agent. And, you know, you were honest and upfront with us, and you told us you were a new agent, and you'd never sold a house before, never had a listing before, that we were your first customers. I said, yep, that's true. Everybody got to start somewhere. He said, yeah, but I don't know that I want to take a chance on somebody with no experience to list my house. I said, that's fair. Mind if I ask a question? He goes, no, go ahead. And I said, okay, you told me that, you know, you work for the power company. He said, yes. How long you been there? 25 years. You start new there? Mm-hmm. When you started new there, did you have any experience? He said, no. I said, but somebody took a chance on you, didn't they? Somebody felt they could trust you. Somebody felt you would do a good job. He said, that's right. I said, I'm only asking you to do the same for me that somebody else already did for you. And he listed the house with me. I didn't defend that I could do a better job because I had plenty of time. I didn't have any business or anything like I've heard other people do. All I did was take him back to that same position that he was in and ask him if he would trust me, like somebody took a chance on him.
So you're connecting the other side to a personal experience that they've had where they might have been in a similar situation or might be put in a similar situation so that they can empathize with you.
Yes, absolutely. You don't get anywhere by arguing. And I don't want to be on the defense. What I want is to have them understand that what I'm asking for is not abnormal. In fact, they perhaps have done that before. Or if they haven't done it, somebody they know has done it. But everybody can think back to their first job. We all remember it, how scary that job interview was. And so I think if you just take people to their own comfort zone, does that make sense?
It does.
Just take them to their own comfort zone. Let them come to their own conclusion. Let them come to that conclusion. But most people wouldn't even have thought to ask the man that question. They would have gone right into defending their position. And when you're trying to overcome an objection, you don't need to defend your position in that manner.
You're creating a dialogue where you're trying to put both of you on the same side of the table instead of being opposing to one another.
That is correct. It is my firm belief that everything should be a win-win. If it isn't a win-win, we don't need to do it because somebody's going to end up mad and ugly. We don't need to take advantage of people to sell real estate or buy or sell anything or do anything. We don't need to take advantage of anybody. A seller can get a fair price for their home. A buyer can pay a fair price for the home. If the buyer isn't willing to pay a fair price for the home, somebody will be, and they can move on to something else where they think they can steal something or beat up on somebody. They just not our buyer. That's all. And I just believe that things need to be worked out so it's beneficial to all concerned. And there's ways to do it. There's give and take in every negotiation. But if somebody only wants to take, pretty soon the other person doesn't want to give. And then you end up at a stalemate. So overcoming objections isn't that hard. It's just a matter of asking enough questions to get through the thought process.
Let's do a couple more examples to try to drive that home. Let's go back to our buyer scenario. Let's say that you've showed a buyer a bunch of homes. You finally find the home that looks like it's going to work. The buyers are excited about it. It's obvious they like it. You ask them to make an offer, and the buyer says, I want to think about it.
Well, you can go about that a couple of ways, Mike. So role play with me. So, Mike, what do you need to think about?
You know, my mother-in-law always told me that I should think about things and not make any rash decisions. So I'd like to think about this overnight. I know we're in a hot market, but I'd really like to think about it overnight.
Well, that's probably pretty good advice from your mother-in-law. And you probably should go ahead and follow that. But if you choose to do that, I just want to leave you one thought. If you want to take time to think about it, in other words, what I call sleep on it, while you're sleeping on it, as long as you understand you may not be sleeping in it because you take too long for a decision, that is perfectly okay with me, Mike. Would that bother you?
Oh, what do you mean I wouldn't be sleeping in it? I don't understand.
Well, you mentioned it was a hot market, which means we're probably not the only buyers looking. So if while you're taking your time to think about it, and somebody else makes an offer and buys it, is that going to be okay with you?
I could probably live with it, but I don't think my wife could.
Okay.
She really likes this house.
So then could you cut down the amount of time you need to sleep on it?
What do you have in mind?
Well, I don't know. That's up to you. You know, see, my job is to help you. My job is to provide facts and data so you can make a decision. My job is to keep you from stepping on the alligator. Your job is to decide which house you want to buy and make the offer on it. So if while you're thinking about it, somebody else buys it, what you just said is your wife's going to be upset about it. So rather than thinking about it for a whole day or 2 days or 3 days, do you think maybe you and your wife could take an hour or two and discuss it and make a decision so that if this is what you want, we can move forward and get our offer in? Or do you really need the day or two or three to think about it and take a chance that it won't be there?
Well, my real concern is I don't want to overpay for this house.
Wow, you and every buyer I've ever worked with. There's a buyer school out there, I'm telling you. Absolutely, there's a buyer school. Nobody wants to overpay. Nobody wants to overpay. But you know what? Even at the height of the market, Mike, when people were bidding prices up so high that we were starry-eyed, we couldn't see that high, you know what happened? The appraiser came in and gave us a dose of reality. So even if you offer a price that may seem too high, the appraiser has to justify it. So you're not going to be able to pay too much, because if you do, the appraiser sees the same, it's not going to appraise. So I tell you what, let's do, if it's okay with you, let's go run the comps and let's see where this house fits in to what's been selling that have similar amenities in similar areas. And then we'll know what seems to be the market price for the house. Would that work for you?
Yeah, that sounds fair.
And then let's offer the seller a fair price. In fact, here's my goal for you, Mike. When you pick the house you want to buy, we need to make that seller an offer that is so good, they're going to be scared to death not to sign it. Would that work for you?
But now you're scaring me. So good, you mean like overpay?
No. I mean, we look at the data. We determine what the market feels the price of the house should be, and we make a fair offer and a good offer. We find out what the seller's move-out date is, and let's see if we can give it to them. We find out what's important to the seller, as far as what they have to have out of that house. And if we can give it to them, give it to them. Don't fight for the refrigerator when you've already got one, and that's important to the seller. But let's make it a fair price and make it a good offer so that the seller will find it.
And you'll help me research that to make sure I don't make a mistake.
Absolutely. We'll pull the figures. We'll take a look at them. And by the way, when you said so we don't make a mistake, Mike, have you never made a mistake before?
I've made plenty.
And lived to tell it?
I'm still here.
Me too. So let me just tell you, we're going to do the best we can with what we have to work with. And so I don't think we're going to make a mistake. I think we're going to look at the data, analyze it properly, and we're going to make the right offer. That's what I think. Because I think we've already made mistakes before and we've learned from them, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I don't think we're going to do that.
Well, let's move forward.
Yeah. And again, what I want them to do is get comfortable with what they're doing. Did you feel comfortable?
You made me feel comfortable. And I think one of the reasons is that you were honest about it, that sincerity, but the honesty. You didn't say, hey, this is going to be perfect and there's not going to be any mistakes made and everything's going to be great and you're going to get the best price ever. You said, look, you're going to do the best you can with the situation, and that's honest. And I could feel that, and it made me feel more comfortable.
And that's really what you want to do, because we all make mistakes. We've all been there. And any person who can tell you they've never made one, you just need to cross the street and keep trucking, get away from them as quick as you can, because it's not true. We all know it. So I think what works for me, Mike, and will work for anybody out there listening, is the trust and the honesty. See, it doesn't make any difference to me. I don't have to have a house. And I tell that to the buyers. I have one. My motto on my desk, the lender gave me years ago, because one of my favorite statements, if you like it, I love it. I don't have to have the sale. I don't have to have the listing. I told the seller not long ago when I was talking to him about price, and he thought that was not enough for his house. And I said, well, here's the sales. Pick three that you think that the appraiser can use to justify the price you're looking at, and I'll help you justify it. And he goes, well, how do I know you're just not trying to get me to price it low to get it sold real quick so you can get your commission and get going? And I said, well, you don't. But let me share this with you. I am drawing that great big Social Security check just like you are. And that allows me to be financially independent. So I can afford to tell you the truth. Because I don't have to have the listing to pay my bills. That little check goes in the bank every month. And he just cracked up. So I said, you know, I can afford to tell you the truth. Now, you may not like it. But it's, and that's okay too. But I don't want to lie to you. Here it is. Here's what other buyers and sellers have been doing in the marketplace in similar type homes like yours. And these are the facts, and that's all I can share with you. If you want to list with another agent who promises you a higher price, good luck and God bless. That's certainly your prerogative. And I stood up, and his wife looked at him and said, oh, for God's sakes, shut up and do the paperwork with this lady.
The voice of reason.
Yeah. It's like, I wasn't trying to talk him into giving his house away. There's the numbers. Pick one. So I think the honesty and the trust. I think before we help anybody do anything, we have to be able to trust them, and they have to be able to trust us. And if the trust factor is not there, then it's going to be an issue. You're going to have a problem. So I'd rather pass somebody by and pick somebody that I trust and that will trust me. Because if you and I were sitting across the table, Mike, I would have reached out and patted you on the hand. And when you started talking as the buyer about paying too much money, I would have patted you on the hand and said, Mike, do you trust me? And I would have waited for your answer. Because you see, Mike, if you trust me, we're going to pull the right information. And you're going to make the right decision. And if you don't trust me, I can't help you. I'm not the right agent. And that's it. And it gets to be about that simple for me.
Yeah, your head is in the right place. Your heart is in the right place. And then it just flows. I think that's fantastic. Thank you for walking us through that.
My pleasure. My pleasure. I'm definitely known as the queen of objections, for sure. Because I will keep asking the questions until you've answered it yourself.
That seems to be one of your keys, is get the other side to come to the conclusion that you're looking for, or come to their own conclusion, and hopefully it matches yours.
Right. What I want them to do is come to a conclusion that works best for them. Even if they come to the conclusion they don't need to buy the house, or they come to the conclusion they don't need to sell their house, that's okay. But they've come to the best conclusion for themselves at the time. See, if I push something off on you as a buyer or seller, then it's always going to be my fault. I've done something wrong. But if it's your decision, you came to that conclusion, you buy into it, and it makes it okay.
Make them own the decision.
That's correct. That's exactly right. I don't know about you, but I have adult children who call for advice, and they really don't want the advice. You know it and I know it. What they want you to do is agree with what they've already decided. I'm the same way. When they call me about something, I say, well, I don't know anything about that. You know, did you think about this? Mm-hmm. Did you think about that? Yes. Well, what do you think about it? Well, they'll give me all the reasons. What are the reasons for going forward with it? Okay. What are all the reasons for not going forward with it? Okay. Seem like the reasons for going forward with it seem to outweigh the reasons for not going forward with it, right? Yes. So what do you think you ought to do? Well, I think we ought to move forward with it. I think you made a terrific decision.
Reinforcement.
Correct. Exactly. I mean, that's all they want anyway. So as long as I don't see anything really bad in their thinking, then go for it. And that's what you're doing with these buyers and sellers. They're looking for reinforcement. When you were playing the buyer, not wanting to pay too much, weren't you looking for that?
Oh, yeah.
And so if I lead you back to your own conclusion, you feel real good that what you're doing is what you're supposed to be doing.
Alexis, tell me about your team.
My husband, Michael, has a broker's license also. And he's been licensed. We've been married since 85. He's been licensed since 87. Michael's kind of our team manager, so to speak. Michael takes everything off of my back that I don't need to do because I'm best when I'm with the people. Not only does he, thank God, pay the bills and so forth and keeps our little team running here, but he measures the houses, puts on the lock boxes, he takes all the pictures, and basically does all the running around and takes things off our back. My daughter, Lisa, has a real estate license, and she's worked with me for about 19 years. So Lisa's my buyer's assistant, and she also works as my listing coordinator. So jack of all trades and anything that has to do with real estate. Donna is our admin person. Donna's been with me 15 years, and Donna's not licensed, but she's terrific as an admin person. She's one of the best I've ever had. She's great with the people and keeps on top of things for me and lets me know if she even thinks there might be an issue. And she just stays on top of everything from contract to close. And that's it. That's our team.
You have a tight team. You've had nice production numbers. People out there are looking at your business model, and a question is going to pop up. Are you profitable?
Yes, we're profitable. Remember me, I've got that check coming in every month from Social Security. No. Well, I found in years past, so many of my real estate friends went out and they hired all kinds of people. They had so many team members, you know, as many as 20, 25 people on their team. And yet when they looked at their bottom line, it wasn't as good as mine. So I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that model. All I'm simply saying is you have to do what works for you. And what works for me is to stay small. We don't have a ton of expenses. And so as long as we stay small and we work smart, we're fine and we're profitable. And so to me, real estate funds life. And we have fun with what we're doing. And yes, you know, we're like everybody else. We come in and find out, oh my God, we got termites or something that we have to deal with. But overall, we have fun with what we're doing. And yes, we're profitable. Otherwise, I would go volunteer at one of the charities. If I'm not going to make any money, I can stay busy doing that. So I think people need to look at what they're doing and how they can become more profitable. And I think they can become more profitable with a smaller team. Now, what that means is I have to work more. And I know some realtor friends out there who really don't want to do that. They have a listing partner, and they have a buyer partner, and they've got several of them, and this, that, and the other thing. And what they do is more kind of like the broker of our company does. Is, you know, she has all these people working under her, and that's good. There's nothing wrong with it. You have to choose the model that works for you. I'm a hands-on person. I want to be involved with my customers. I'm involved in every one of the transactions. So sometimes I go on a listing appointment, and sellers say, well, I heard you do so much business that we probably won't get to talk to you. And I laugh and I say, oh my God, where'd you hear that? I want to talk to that person, because when they can help me figure out how to do that, you're never going to hear from me again. And they just laugh. I'm hands-on, and that's my choosing. We're at this to make a living, and we do. Now, do we sell what some of these other people do, you know, $80 million a year, $100 million a year? The answer is no, because it's not possible in Pensacola. But we do have a small, profitable team.
Alexis, what drives you?
God, Mike, I don't know. I think, you know, if we could answer that question, you might be on to something to make a buck or two. I don't know. I guess what my grandmother, my mother instilled in me many years ago, and that was learn everything you can about what you do. Give people a day and a half's work for a day's pay. And then they will let you do whatever you want to. And your goal in life should just be able to do whatever you want to do. And that's me. I don't ever do anything I don't want to do. I really don't. I just, that's just not me. If when I was waiting tables, if I came in and there was a certain section I wanted to work, I'd go tell the boss, look, I want to work over in that left corner today. And if the boss said you can't, I would hand him the apron and say, you must be waiting on the people because they're calling my name down the street. And I would head for the door, and I meant it. Consequently, he would let me work where I wanted to. I would just come in, and whatever the gut feeling was that day, that's where I worked. There's no rhyme or reason for it. It's just how I felt. So I do 99 and 44 100% of what I do based on feel. Is that crazy? But I don't know what drives me, Mike. What drives me is to be able to do what I want to, I guess.
Why have you been so successful?
Can I say darned if I know?
Sure.
Would that ruin your whole tape? I guess, and I've been asked that question before, and I've given the same answer, because darned if I know. I can only speculate that if you are upfront and honest with the people, if you are trustworthy, if you are knowledgeable, and they know and feel that you always have their best interest at heart, that's what makes you successful, is that you care, that you truly care. It's more than a business. It's caring about these people. And I think that's what makes me successful. It's the people that make me successful. It's not me. I'm nothing without the people. And so the people make me successful. The people who are willing to take a chance on me day in and day out are the ones that make me successful, not me. I think our problem tends to be, particularly in real estate, that sometimes our head gets so big we can't get in the doorway. And we begin to believe our own press releases. And it's the people that make you successful. The people make or break you. I'm thankful all the years I've been in real estate, I've never gotten any bad press. all those years I've been doing that call-in talk show, nobody monitors those calls. If you call in, they're going to put you through. Nobody has ever said anything ugly or negative about me or to me. And so I think that's what makes you successful, at least for me, is your reputation. I work real hard to have a good reputation for doing what I say I'll do, even if I got to stay up till midnight to get it done for you, and being honest with you, not lying about things. Even if it's bad news, I find a way to deliver it, but I deliver it. And I think that's all I can say about me, and I think that's what makes me successful is the people. Paying it forward, being willing to give them that day and a half's work for the day's pay. I took a waitress job years ago, Mike, and I really needed the job. The guy told me he wasn't hiring. And I said, okay, I'm out of here. I'm looking for a job. And he came after me, and he said, let's talk. And I said, I'll make you a deal. I'll work for you for a week. You don't have to pay me. Just let me keep my tip. And if you think I'll work out for your restaurant, then you hire me. On day two, he asked me when I wanted to work. And he didn't pay me for the week because I agreed I would work for a week for free. And he was going to pay me. And I told him, no, that wasn't our deal. So I think, you know, when people see that you're willing to get out there and to truly work, that's what's important.
Alexis, if you were going to advise a brand new agent just getting in the business, what would you tell them to do first?
I would simply say, to me, the most important thing that you can do for yourself is education, and then apply what you've learned. When you stop learning, it should be when they're throwing the dirt on top. And what I find happens is agents get a license, they get a little business, they get somewhat successful, whatever that means to them, and then they don't learn anything else after that except take whatever continuing education that their state may require them to continue their license. And that's the extent of their learning. Get out of town. Go to your state conventions. Go to the National Association of Realtors conventions. Work on your Certified Residential Specialist designation. Go get your GRI. Work on your ABR. Whatever's out there you need to do. Because everything you go to, you learn something. And if you go back and apply what you've learned, then that's going to help you to become more successful, and it's going to keep you out of trouble. So as a new agent, I was like a sponge, and I guess I still am, Mike. I'm like a sponge. My grandmother said, never should you get so high that you forgot where you came from. So when we get the success bug and we think we're above learning something different and applying something different is when we start to spiral down, I think. So I think as a new agent, you need to learn. You need to learn from the people who are doing it right. Don't be afraid of the hard work. Don't get discouraged. If your heart is really in being successful in the real estate business, be willing to roll up your sleeves and do the things that other people won't do. And that's what makes you successful, being willing to do what others won't do, being there for your people. If realtors aren't available on Saturday and Sunday, you need to be the person who's available on Saturday and Sunday. If you look around you now, you find that a lot of dentists and doctors are providing weekend hours to get started because nobody else is doing it. Hair salons, nail salons, people that are open on Sunday afternoon. Why? Because they're hungry. They're looking for the business. And people who have to work 6 or 7 days a week, they'll go do business with them because that's the only time they can do business. So learn everything you can about what you do. Apply what you learn. Don't just sit back and have a smart bookshelf in your office. Learn and apply. And then help people. Help other people. Help other new agents. Help the people that come to you, your buyers and sellers. Be the person that they want to work with. The other thing I learned as a young person from my mother and my grandmother, and that is if you have a choice between being liked or respected, and you have to make that choice because it's nice to be both, choose respected. They don't necessarily have to like you, but by darn if they respect you. you're going to have business. And that has to do with the realtors that you work with in your community, as well as the buyers and sellers. Work towards gaining respect, and then you'll be successful. I'm going to leave you with this thought, Mike. You remember the famous Kennedy speech? Ask not what the country can do for you, but what you can do for the country. That's what we need to apply to our business. Don't look for what these people can do for you. Don't be adding up the commission before you show them the bathroom. Start thinking about what you can do for them to make a difference in their lives. You're not on the earth to mark time. You're on the earth to make a difference in somebody else's life. Because when it's all over with, that's all you've got. There is nothing else. Period.
Well, Alexis, you've made a difference in over 5,100 families' lives. And all the agents listening to this call, you applied the lessons you learned waiting tables to selling houses and became a top agent. But you never forgot your roots and the principles that got you there. You care deeply about your clients and make them your friends. You showed it's easy to handle objections when you let them come to their own conclusion. You are a true professional. Thank you again for being our top agent of the month. And join us next call when we talk to an agent who tests new ideas like a mad scientist and sold 268 homes last year. Find out who he is on the next Success Call.
You've been listening to Success Calls on the Mastermind Agent Network, where top real estate agents from across North America reveal their success secrets, strategies, and systems in up-close and personal interviews. You can find all the calls at www.mastermindagent.com.